Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Ever see the film Minority Report? It's about a futuristic special police force that works on what's called preventive policing, using psychics and technology to predict who will commit murder and stop it before it happens. Here's a scene from the movie.
In the 6 years we've been conducting our little experiment, there hasn't been a single murder.
And now pre-crime can work for you.
We want to make absolutely certain that every American can bank on the utter infallibility of this system.
Opponents worry this system could arrest innocent people. Well, China has developed a real-life version of preventive policing. Investigative reporter Jeffrey Cain's new book, The Perfect Police State, tells the story of China's vast surveillance machine used against ethnic minority Muslims in Western China. Jeffrey Cain, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
Now, you start this book with the phrase that the targets of this surveillance call the situation. What is the situation if you went through your day in Western China?
Yes, so the situation is how people from the Uyghur ethnic group describe their life without having to reveal too much in front of the authorities. So if you're living under the situation, what that means is that your entire life is surveilled 24/7 by the state, nonstop, by cameras, by artificial intelligence, by a predictive policing system that predicts whether or not you'll commit a crime in the future. Let's say if you're a woman and your husband has been taken away to a concentration camp, you might actually wake up next to a man, a government minder who was sent there to watch over your family and to ensure that you follow the party ideology.
Now, hold on. This is a person not just at your door, but in your bed?
In your bed, yes. The Chinese government has been sending out government-appointed minders whose job is to actually go into your house, live with you for days at a time, and they'll quiz you on party ideology. Are you following the correct line of thinking? Are you a patriot? Are you a good nationalist?
Now, you mentioned Kashgar, one of the big cities in the Western Chinese region of Xinjiang, where a lot of the Uyghur Muslims are. They are the targets of this situation, this machine. How did they become the targets?
So this actually goes back to the War on Terror. There were a series of terrorist attacks back in the early 2010s, about 10 years ago now, and also protests in 2009 that signified to the Chinese government that, you know, there is discontent in this region. There were people who were traveling to Syria, traveling to Afghanistan to study jihad and to potentially become terrorists. But instead of picking out those enemies among a vast population in this region, the Chinese government decided to respond with a dragnet approach. They even used terms like, we have to uproot all the weeds. We can't just target one weed. We have to uproot this entire region. So it was a dragnet approach that the Chinese government began just as there were new technological developments, advances in artificial intelligence, big data, deep neural networks. These are all new tech that would allow sophisticated equipment and machinery to essentially observe the population through cameras and through their smartphones and to gather whatever data it could on them. So their clicks, their purchases, their movements, this would all go to a mass database called the IJOP, the Integrated Joint Operations Platform, which is a police platform that would, you know, try to find correlations among data, and then it would nudge police officers when it believed that someone is prone to committing an act of terror in the future and they need to be visited by the police and interrogated, maybe taken away to a concentration camp. So that is Minority Report right there. And that is what is so scary about this system. I've been to the region many times over the years, and on my most recent visit, which was December 2017, I could feel just the terror emanating from regular people. It was as if, you know, you look at them and it's like their identities are blank and they don't want to show any emotion and they're keeping their heads down and kind of walking around the city quickly so nobody stops them and nobody asks for their documents or their ID card. It truly is a place where everyone knows that they're being watched and they're just not sure when or where by these AI cameras.
Wow. Now, one of these persons subject to this is kind of the main character of your book, right? A young woman who goes by the pseudonym MySim. So she goes to school abroad, and she apparently likes to read. How did this woman, Maesim, find herself in this machine that spies on the Uyghurs?
So she was a very young, intellectual woman who, as you said, likes reading. She studied in Turkey. She did her master's degree there. And, you know, one of the things about the Uyghurs in China is that if they travel overseas, or say if they take on, you know, interests that are intellectual, or say they're reading banned literature, such as the Quran, they become deeply suspicious in the eyes of the government. And so Maesim was in Turkey, finishing her master's degree, and she would return home every summer. She was actually from a very well-to-do, an even elite family in China, you know, even though they were from the Uyghur group. But this system, as she went home every summer to see her family, just began turning against her. The government minder knocked on her door one day, said that you have to install a camera in your living room. It's going to be connected to the local public security bureau, and that's the police station, essentially. And then eventually, you know, after being monitored in her living room, she was called in for interrogations, where she would be, you know, grilled by three officers sitting in this gloomy, dark, isolated room in a local station. And then over time, she was finally called to, formerly it's called a re-education center, but it's a concentration camp. Mm. And at first, she was going to do daily lessons, 6 hours a day, and she would be allowed to go home. But she was reassigned again to an even higher level security concentration camp called a detention center. And she was forced to undergo just bizarre, nonsensical rituals that were designed to psychologically torture her, and even physically sometimes torture her, but mostly psychologically. And she realized quickly what this system was designed to do. It was a mass attempt to erase the heritage and the culture and the identity of an entire people, to just simply do like a hard drive wipe. That was really what the system in Xinjiang was designed to do.
Now, Jeffrey, you talked a little bit about the technology that's being employed here. Can you talk a little bit more about how state-of-the-art some of this technology became over the years, whether it's recognizing voices or faces or high-tech cameras? Can you talk a little bit more about the level of technology employed here?
It's a mixture of AI and facial and voice recognition, and also mass data gathering through smartphones, through the WeChat app in particular. The thing about the technology is that it is new and novel, but I also found in my own reporting that even though the technology gives the impression that it's extremely sophisticated, it's actually not that sophisticated once you look under the hood, because all it's doing is just a dragnet. It's not really a sophisticated, tinkered approach to, you know, targeting certain people or targeting certain places. It gathers mass data on what every single person is doing, and then it finds correlations that don't really make sense to humans. I mean, it'll determine, like, oh, if you walk in through the front door one day, you change your habit, you usually walk in through the back door, the police should just visit you and check you out, make sure that everything's okay and that you're not going to commit some crime in the future based on the door that you walk in. I mean, those are the sorts of things that would pop up. That's what's scary, is that it's out of the control of the humans who are using it.
Can I ask you about the companies involved here? I mean, there are Chinese companies developing this technology, American companies developing this technology. You know, we in this country have had a debate over big companies and whether they're assisting the government in snooping on us. What have you learned about how tightly connected these companies are to the Communist Party?
There are two groups of companies that have been involved in creating this surveillance state in Xinjiang. And the first are Chinese firms that, under Chinese law, they are essentially required to do what the Communist Party wants if there's some kind of investigation or national security matter. These are Chinese companies, but just to make clear, they are major global multinational firms that are exporting facial recognition, voice recognition. A lot of the similar technologies that have been deployed in Xinjiang are now being sold to governments and police departments in places like sub-Saharan Africa, Uganda, Kenya, also Central Asia, Uzbekistan. So these are, you know, regimes that can be authoritarian and that are deploying them to spy on the opposition and whatnot. It truly is a scary development that China is exporting this technology. Mm. But we can't just blame Chinese companies, because, you know, American firms too, Silicon Valley firms, They were deeply involved in creating a lot of the Chinese surveillance state. American firms inked deals to supply the semiconductor chips for Chinese AI being used against the Uyghur population in Xinjiang.
In the course of reporting this book, and you've reported across a lot of Asia and a lot of authoritarian places, how hard was it to do this reporting in the middle of this system that you write about?
It was very difficult. You know, whenever I went to Xinjiang, I would bump up against this surveillance state, and they know how to find you and get you out quickly if they don't like what you're doing there. So I was able to report mainly through refugees. I spent 3 years in Turkey, where most Uyghur refugees have gone and resettled. It was the Uyghurs who very heroically came forward with stories, fully knowing that, you know, like they could be at risk or their families could be at risk. They really wanted to make sure that the world would know about this.
Well, Jeffrey Cain, author of the new book, The Perfect Police State. Jeffrey, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Scott.